Now, here is Bill Resnick concluding his three-part interview with Bill Smaldone.
Hi, Bill Smaldone. Welcome to KABU.
Hello, Bill.
Bill Smaldone teaches history at Willamette University. His specialty, Germany in the 20th Century, writes a lot. Among his books are Confronting Hitler and European Socialism, A Concise History. He's put in a lot of work studying the failure of the German Revolution after World War I, which is a pivotal point in world history, not only for creating the conditions of Hitlerism. He served 4 years as a radical in the Salem City Council. He co-founded KMUZ Radio, a new KABU-like station in Salem, and he's on the board of the Salem Weekly. Bill, for the last 2 weeks, we discussed Hitler's rise to absolute power by manufacturing a crisis and threat with the central act of burning of the Reichstag, Germany's parliament building, as a symbol of democracy. He and his Nazi party blamed the communists for doing it. He won a declaration of martial law. And finally, after several months, he got the parliament sitting in another building and voted to give him emergency powers to unilaterally act. And he certainly did act, including during that period maneuvering to take control of the military. That was Germany 84 years ago. Today, the U.S., it's a different society to be sure, but it's unnerving the last several months, particularly after the election. Bill, let's compare Germany in the 30s, the U.S. today, on a few big issues that have to do with the road towards a totalitarian state of some kind. One issue today is about whether the right wing, with Trump in the lead, can manufacture a crisis will allow them to gain near absolute power. We can also talk about Trump himself and his vision of himself and his obvious need to get adulation and be worshipped and be the center of attention, although Hitler he is not, is my guess, and get absolute power. The second, seems to me, issue we want to talk about is whether there's the possibility of delegitimating the judiciary and the press and political parties in general, win popular commitment or delegitimate popular commitment to sort of democratic governance. And finally, we can discuss what the left should be doing. So let's talk about Trump a little bit, the Republican Party, the way they're trying to run the state, the executive, and how things seem to be slipping towards this totalitarian outcome.
Well, I think it's a very interesting phenomenon. If you think about Adolf Hitler's experience in the 1920s and in the early 30s, I don't think there's any doubt that Adolf Hitler built a cross-class popular movement from below, and that he was able to ride popular sentiment against the Weimar Republic to power. I don't think that Donald Trump was a part of any kind of movement-building process when he was running The Apprentice and in his early months running for office. I think what he was able to do was, in a sense, to impose himself into the American political system because of his money and because of
his fame, basically.
His fame, yeah, that's right. So he was able to convert his television fame and his fame as a realtor into a political intervention, right? And in this intervention, he was able to divide and conquer as he moved along during the various primaries. And finally, he was able to emerge using his own wealth and his own ability to manipulate the press in such a way that he could do two things simultaneously. One was he was able to tap into really genuine grassroots sentiment against American elites, right, and to tap into very real dissatisfaction in many communities across the country with the state of the world. People are really unhappy with a lot of things, rightfully, and Trump spoke to those people in ways that the mainstream leadership of the two big parties did not. The other thing he was able to do was to co-opt a part of the Republican Party into his own political effort, and he's continuing to do that as he begins to flex his muscles as president. And we saw that, I think, this week when he spoke at the CPAC conference, in which he basically was able to appeal to people who last year at this time didn't want to have anything to do with him, right? And now they're sort of jumping onto his bandwagon. And they are allowing him, in many ways, to reshape the ideology of the Republican Party. So Trump has been very successful intervening in the American political process. I would not argue that he was carried to power over the long haul by a grassroots movement, but he was able to insert himself into American politics and appeal to grassroots sentiment, right, in a very short period of time. And that has worked to his advantage thus far.
He, in fact, is in the process, though, of not just building sort of a grassroots movement, but trying to build it around himself and his personality, and that he's going to be the savior.
Right.
And it's
right.
him who's doing it. That's what's really sort of worrisome. Instead of doing things through constitutionalist means,
right.
and it seems to me, we'll talk about that, constitutionalism is really important to the left, not to say it isn't in this country enormously flawed, especially for the bottom 50% of people. As things operate, their rights are extremely limited. But it seems to me the constitutionalism is important, and he wants to operate, it seems to me, as sort of the dictator and get great adulation and be seen as the savior and build monuments to himself. He already has a lot of them in the world. Everything is called the Trump National, International, Global Galactic Golf Course. I mean, his buildings are insanely absurd. And his home is gilt-edged, everything. But he really is seeking sort of this approval and love and adulation. And when he starts failing, he's also very thin-skinned, it seems to me that that's where the danger is. And he is very likely to fail. I mean, his economic policies are absurd. They're all very contradictory. No one can figure that out, what his various positions. And the Republican Party is at sea on health care, on economic policy, on taxes. He says a million different things. It's not at all clear. My guess is that the old conservatives are going to win this one and do terrible things that are going to cost him, in fact, a lot of popularity. What happens when he starts going downhill very, very badly? Well, and there's a crisis of some kind. Some crazy person blows up a bus in Times Square or something, and it could be a provocateur. It's unnerving, the possibilities.
Right. Well, he did say repeatedly during the campaign that only he could solve the problems of the country. Only he. And that, of course, sounds rather Hitler-esque. And it's something that Louis XIV, the great French absolutist king, who said, perhaps apocryphally, I am the state, right? Those kinds of sentiments are always very worrisome. And since Trump has placed a great deal of effort on identifying enemies, such as the Muslim community, right, or now the press, if we had some kind of disaster in the country, you know, a major terrorist attack where lots of people are killed, that would certainly provide a pretext for him to wield the instruments of state power in ways that could be highly disturbing, right? And I would wager that he's waiting for such a moment.
It appears that way, the way he responded to the judiciary limiting his powers.
That's right.
You're going to be blamed for the crisis when it comes.
Now, I don't know about the contradictions of his policies. You have to recall that Nazi policy was also very contradictory, and Nazi policy was able to move along quite well, as long as the people were convinced that, in general, things were getting better, right? So you can have all kinds of contradictions in your policies, and you can have a contradictory ideology, but if you can use the fear as a kind of glue to hold various elements of your constituency together, even if they have contradictory interests, and if you can provide enough crumbs to different groups simultaneously, then you can hold together your coalition for quite a long time. Hitler's way, ultimately, of holding the coalition together, of course, was war, right?
War of the kind that Hitler waged, that could last a long time with the rest of the world, it's not in the cards. They might just go to war with Islam, it's true, as sort of this long, grinding sort of effort to wipe out ISIS or whatever and call it a huge crisis. But
right. Well, there are different ways of waging war, and I heard recently that the regime is considering now condemning the Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood straddles 92 different countries and has enormous power in some places, including in places that are at the moment cooperating with the United States, like Jordan. If we were to go to war against Islam, that war could be fought out ideologically in terms of a large-scale sort of propaganda assault against the Islamic world, but it could also result in American forces imposing American power in different parts of the world simultaneously, as has been the case already for the last 15 years. And it's been very difficult to challenge the American military state as long as we've been involved in all these struggles, because they keep claiming they need all these resources. I don't think Trump would hesitate for a minute to use the American military if he thought it would prop up his political popularity.
No, and that's a real question of whether the military wants to remain constitutionalist. That is, to have a civilian government rather than being partners with a dictator and the police. And it seems to me that that's in some ways up in the air and it has to be considered. This is Bill Resnick for The Old Mole talking to Bill Smaldone, who's a German historian who's read about and studied in Germany at length then about the rise of Nazism and the problems that the left and constitutionalists in Germany had in stopping them. Bill, I think maybe now's the time to talk about the United States and the left today. Mm-hmm. There are parts of the military and police in the United States who, in fact, challenge democratic principles and are not interested. They see the need for a strong state, and they could unite under some conditions where the Congress gave Trump huge amounts of power. They might be ready to wield it. We should talk about how a left can deal with that kind of a situation and what it has to do now. We're still not in that position. And we aren't in total war with Islam yet, so right. It seems to me we can talk about a peace movement of some kind that would constrain our warrior class with China or Russia or Islam. There's lots of places that the warrior class wants to make war on in one way or another.
Well, I would say, Bill, first of all, in terms of things to fear, one of the things I'm very fearful of is Trump's willingness to pour resources into the Border Patrol, into ICE, and to do so very quickly, and to bring into those organizations, which are already bloated after 20 years of expansion, to bloat them further with types that are, as you say, not committed to the constitutional norms of the Republic. Basically, to give carte blanche to groups like ICE would be very dangerous. I think it's the job of the left, speaking broadly, to form a coalition, right, with all the forces of the progressive left and of left-of-center forces in the country to challenge Trump at every level. And so, for example, if we're concerned about police forces and which direction police forces are going to go, a lot of our police forces in this country are local police forces and they are state police forces. And so we have to have power at those levels. And that means we have to find people who are willing to organize both inside the system and outside. We got to have people run for office on the one hand, and we got to have people organizing outside of sort of the parliamentary lanes and organizing mass movements that can keep the politicians' feet to the fire. And you can do a lot on the local level. So if you have, for example, here in Salem, if you have a progressive council, then that council can set the tone for what the police does, and it could control the activities of the police, what kinds of police are hired, and so on. And that's got to happen across the country.
And maintain an ideological commitment that is a commitment by the population to, in fact, constitutionalism.
Correct.
Trump's going at the press and contributing to a right-wing press and right-wing social media and all of the rest of it and building these silos of right-wingers. To the extent that we can, we have to maintain a left ideological thrust and ideas and present them to people, and controlling some governments, at least, some of the apparatus of the state, who also preach those values, even when they violate them in practice very, very often, especially with regard to the poor. That's important.
Right. I don't want to blow our own horn here, but this is really important to remind people of why it's really important to have radio stations like KBOO and KMUZ that can challenge the mainstream from the left, right, and that can form a foil to the far right, and also hold our political leaders' feet to the fire. Same is true of local newspapers like the Salem Weekly, which form a kind of counterpole to the corporate papers. Like we have here in Salem, we have the Statesman Journal, which is a USA Today Gannett paper. And so we have to basically push the envelope, right? That's the job of the left, is to push the envelope and to build organizations that can keep the pressure on. But we also want to help people who are operating in sort of the mainstream institutions of the country, like your city council, like your state legislature. We want to get good people in there so that they will use the instruments of the state to protect the republic and to strengthen the republic's institutions, which are right now, I think, under threat.
Some parts of our movements think that the key question now is to unite the left somehow. I mean, the, quote, revolutionary left. And they put that in opposition to working to maintain this sort of fragile constitutionalism that we sometimes can use for democratic purposes right now. And I don't think those are in opposition, actually. You can do both at the same time. That is, really promote left values, democratic values, and institutions, and, in fact, a reconstruction of the economy and state, which is so necessary to deal with environmental problems and others, and problems of poverty. We are going to be pushed towards either, it seems to me, sort of a fascist control, or towards a very different way of living and maintaining an economy and a decent life for all. And we can talk about those things. They're all now open to question. The capitalist system is now open to question more than at least ever in my lifetime. And I'm a little guy. But you can do both. You can both try and maintain the benefits of the degree of sort of constitutional government that we can use and employ. And at the same time, it seems to me, discuss a real reconstruction of the way we operate.
Right. Look. There are two things I think that everybody who cares about the American Republic and the potential for a progressive future have to keep their eyes on. One is we all have to be united against the Trump regime, defending all of the civil rights, all of the things that have been gained over the past 100 years have to be defended against this regime. At the same time, we have to keep our eyes on the future, and that is on the progressive future, the future that can be built as a result of these struggles, that can be more democratic, that can think in different ways about the kind of economic order we have in this country. I mean, if we want to go back and do a little quoting of the classics, we can talk about how Marx and Engels were in a complete agreement that the struggle for socialism would be fought out on the terrain of the bourgeois republic. And so the gains of the bourgeois republic, the gains of the republic that we now live in, have to be preserved and built upon if we want to move forward. And right now, many of those gains are under threat.
Right. And we can, though, partly institutionalize the way the new state operates in the current state. Not entirely, but in fact, worker-owned and controlled workshops and democratic schools and democratic families. There are ways in which we can live very different lives even in this society. Democratic radio stations. We don't have to sort of just be planning for keeping a utopian notions of what it could be. We can actually build them and at the same time, it seems to me, defend what working people have fought for like civil rights and liberties and speech and public education for the last 200 years.
I agree. It would also be a big mistake for any element of an anti-Trump coalition to get into a kind of war of disparagement against other parts of the coalition. George Orwell, in the 1930s, as the fascist movements were gaining ground, made an impassioned plea to the left in 1938 to pull together in a united coalition basically all of the decent people in society, right? And I think that's one of the things we have to do right now. We have to pull together all the people who are appalled at the savagery of the regime that now has power in this country, and we have to use the momentum in the construction of that movement to combat the current regime, and also to think about what we can do differently. And that last part should be a positive educational effort rather than a brutal fight among different elements of the anti-Trump coalition.
Bill Smaldone, thanks a lot for talking to us today. Keep up the good work.
Thanks a lot, Bill.